That was Big City Orchestra from their Sound Effects Library Volume 2 Greatest Hits and Test Tones CD, released by the Pogus label back in 1993. And the track listing is so difficult that I can't actually tell you the title of that one. I'm sorry. But it was the fourth track. With me this evening is Dan Gleason, a Chicago area writer. Would you call yourself a writer?
I would try it. I would say it. Maybe around certain company. Other company I would choose not to say very much.
And Dan makes books and zines, self-published, which are available in the Chicago area at Quimby's. Other venues? Other places? Quimby's your primary outlet?
Oh, and online.
And online at stopgostop.com.
That's right, yeah.
/ Dan Gleason. And you read out a lot.
I do.
And you make these zines, which people can buy.
On the work printer.
On the work printer?
Yeah, the work. yeah.
And so you've got a new story that you're going to read for us this evening?
That is right.
And this will be published soon?
No, it already is. It's out there.
Oh.
It's called In the Westlands. A travelogue for a place familiar but impossible to get to. That's what I'm going to read from tonight.
Okay. Do you want to...
Let me go ahead and do that.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead
and do that. Hey, let's make it happen. Magic. As I rest, my face molds the dust below me, and I envision a large spiny iguana, a basilisk, and a tuatara back projected over my shoulder as tumbleweeds roll easterly across the terrain ahead. Off in the distance, I see Aztecs erecting a castle made entirely of salt crystals and stare into the piercing eyes of their leader, whose face resembles that of a silver pheasant with characteristic red cheeks and glossy black plumage. All the while, I'm scooping out considerable chunks of my heart with a wooden ladle, high school biology class. Such fantasy brought me here to the west, traveling from the Mojave to the Yucatan and back again, for the desert is a long, expansive dream, allowing no loneliness to be felt in its seclusion, for you are all it seems to ever exist. Though eventually, your sense of isolation causes you to feel fugitive from even yourself, and the nine-banded armadillos as well. This pilgrimage, in what to the untrained eye must appear to be little more than a void, makes one feel as if he were young again, as if he were taking the cushions off the fold-out couch, building a fort in Mother's basement. It is a domicile dedicated to phantasm. There are constant challenges here. You attempt feats of strength with dust caked on every inch of your person hourly, and you find yourself addressing the air in semi-thoughtful vagaries as they do in film regularly while fabricating medicines from the furry brown spikes of a cattail, the meat of a rabbit hoot owl, and a rock, and other such acts of alchemical might. The desert is an ocean that will mirror your happiness, your sadness, it will be whatever you make of it. Standing around waiting to expire here is far too easy, fear of death becomes not unlike the fear of bad fashions, for no one is exempt, and you come to realize everybody ends up lying in the casket in a bad sports coat or pantsuit anyway. Currently, I'm proceeding past a male adult bullfrog that is larger than most human beings. From where I stand, I would have to say the species appears over 4 feet wide and carries a weight of around 260 pounds. I move stealthily in silence, for I know that these beasts will eat anything they can fit into their mouths, up to and including my corpulent person. Oftentimes, one is forced to run away from himself, turn his back on civilization in order to become more civilized. In this life, I've committed so many acts of folly. I rolled dice, played craps, sat at a couple of roulette tables. I've been on cockfights, pit bull matches, scorpion duels, forced storks to eat pigeons down by the lake, set ostriches on emus, and maimed an occasional she-ass, played way too many horseshoes, rampant jarts, victimized all those around me with my bouts of tarantism, yes, my uncontrollable urge to dance, and I dealt cocaine to rich cultural tourists, sons and daughters of the honky elite, temporarily slumming, living in squalor. Plus so many other sins I cannot count, acts of unfathomable savagery, then the rare act of beauty in order to feel redeemed. Oh, narcissism, you had nearly made me a sweeping generality. The most difficult part of my wanderings in Mexico is the fact that I know only two Spanish phrases. I can say, ¿Dónde estás las pelequilas? And ¿Dónde es los pelicanos? But neither of these queries helps me very much when famished. It is dusk. I have come to a canyon to meet my rest, make a blanket out of scrub, out of brush grass, and I doze. But as I slumber, I feel a cold hand at my shoulder, and I awaken to find that it is none other than Karakonokalos, the hairy Sasquatch of Bulgarian origin that walks by night. I run. I run like water through nylons. But as I scamper, I lose the hand-me-down calico vest donated to me by my uncle, misfortune. And when I return to the canyon in the morn, I notice a baby gray coyote and his jackrabbit friend eating the mango I found underneath the palm tree. Looks so tasty, so really, how could I blame them? My stomach growls incessantly. Feels as if a gremlo lives inside its fleshy walls. This wasteland has proven to be site to the apocalypse of my proper nourishment. The voices inside my head tell me, kill your ego, eat the rhinoceros beetle, enjoy the kissing bug, flick the parasites from that decaying chupacabra and imbibe, but I do not give in to their longings. I have not seen a thing for days except a pink cactus that appeared at first to be a giant phallus penetrating the earth's floor. I probe underneath my chin and seize a hair that possesses a thread-like consistency. It becomes taut as I tug at it, yanking the skin of my neck forward. I keep tugging, but it feels as if this string has been designed specifically to pull the flesh from my skull. And then I open my eyes and find that I am in an immense hole, resting where an obviously obese opossum once lived. I am very much wet, but one cannot wet the bed when there is no bed to wet. On the hillock, I spot a mascara gent screaming, ha, get up there, ha, to his ebullient horse. Could not tell at first if it was the distance that made him so tiny, but as I grew nearer, I came to a vile reckoning. This fellow was a member of that gang of dwarves that dresses up like children and robs ice cream trucks, candy shops, theme parks, carnivals, arcades, and go-kart and laser-tag gaming establishments. Ribald sorts, who participate actively in lynchings. In Tucson, I heard they hung a man with an unusually sturdy ream of taffy. Entered a world of ungodly fright, screamed unintentionally as I leapt over the anthills, knowing in my heart that this man would surely slice off my maraschinos. Heard his steed galloping swiftly behind me. I hit dust, saw blood, turned my face toward the sun, and everything went white then gray. Was knocked unconscious, butted the little man's rifle. Still, I came to feeling quite fortunate this was all that occurred. But then I realized, much to my chagrin, the resulting concussion had left me seeing everything in sepia tone. Hoofprints pointed towards the ridge. A serape lay flapping silently in the wind, resting on the ordure. I came upon a black man, his visage not unlike that of the Hopi warrior mother, beady eyes, bright red tongue lopping to the side. Very, very much deceased. I first believed those evil midgets to be behind this, but then spotted the marks on his neck, heard the squeals from the cave nearby. He had been bled by a vampire bat. Went to the crevice to check if he carried any edibles and found a brown pudding-like substance oozing from his satchel. So I enjoyed some of it, and then later I enjoyed a good vomit. My thoughts tell me to fear everything here. I pray to a god each night that I make it through the next day. In my mind's eye, this god appears as a bald eagle with a baby goat's head, talons made of scrumptious candy corn. I also beg forgiveness every evening for that time I killed a man, having thrown demon spit into the poor chap's eye. I find many ants crawling on a boiled beef brisket and ask them to shoo. Apparently the pests understood English, for the largest percentage dismounted as per my request. But the pickings were not very substantial once they were through. So exhausted, so ravenous, forced to rest. I lay on the soil, fantasizing that rats slept beneath me, eating all of my potato chips, my roast beef sandwiches, drinking every ounce of my wonderful-tasting tang. But the noises they made while enjoying themselves, not unlike the chirping of canaries, ah, so soothing. So I allowed them to continue their consumption. A Megaptera novaeanglii, humpback whale, lay expired on the plain. I slept underneath its fin to avoid the sun. Such a miserable sight, extinct Ordovician conodont, more depressing than all the puppies in cages at the Anti-Cruelty Society. Could not stop thinking that this beast probably possessed a 7-foot-long colon, and I also kept thinking that no one ever asks for your change and lands this barren. In the valley, I met an oracle with incredibly flabby, globular breasts. He donned a beaver hat, wore blood lipstick, and insisted he would reveal my future for a small fee. Gave him the only item I carried, a polished buffalo horn found earlier that day. You'll come to a beauty, told me, and meet a gigantic wall of bees. From behind this wall will emerge a missionary, the last descendant of a lost race of clowns, and the spaceman sent to bring us love. But you will disclose to him that this world does not revolve around such feeling, for our existence is more about longing and the pain felt and failed yearning. Balaam the lame will arrive then and torture you for unveiling this truth, forcing you to smell the fat man. And through this process you will become me, exactly who you wish to be, but still somehow end up hating us both. This marked the end of his consultation. I tried to debate the validity of his words, saying in no way that I desire to be him whatsoever, but he insisted I go. During siesta I saw the great Hassani Saba, and meditated on his ideas about incalculable wealth and incalculable consequences. Remembered how I would go to the restroom every 15 minutes unconsciously at the place where I worked just to get away from my desk. And I wept a little, reflecting on all those years I wasted. I kept asking the sky, Had I been here before? Is this not the same terrain as yesterday? Am I gliding around in circles? Are the stars misleading me? Can I trust them? Can I trust myself? And can I trust my mind anymore? But then I became elated, spotting an oasis flourishing with all-you-can-eat fried chicken and an arroyo of sarsaparilla. Remained there resting, enjoying myself for quite some time. But later, when I licked my lips, I found my mouth still tasted of spleen, and I realized that no eating or drinking had taken place whatsoever. The sun blazes, the wind whips my skin. Perhaps I could whine, but who in this world would listen? Head lice had attacked my scalp, and something not unlike the mange infected my facial hair. Oh God, did I ever itch. Where all the cantinas are as promised in cinema, I asked myself. Where's the pulque? The familiar sound of the castanets. Ah, film. You contain nothing but false promises. Began hallucinating. Envisioned the gray-faced child, the blue man. Saw myself trying to talk an extremely slender person into bench-pressing 300 pounds. Could not stop contemplating the lyrics of the 70s funk band Slave, featuring Steve Arrington. Asked the heavens if I could be where my face is not, and whether that would necessitate the capturing of my soul. And I reflected on how I have constantly changed my definition of success to accommodate continuous failures. Then I noticed the light had died, and found rest on top of a dune. Hunger pangs had left me demented, and the gremlins had definitely returned to my guts. They were absolutely tearing my insides apart. I came upon a deserted convent, the Temple of St. Giles, hoping that within its walls I could find rations. But I uncovered only a bag of moldy tortilla chips, a rank slab of beef, and one rotten gourd, all perfectly inedible. This proved fortuitous, however, for I have since learned that Giles was patron saint to the lepers, so probably would have gotten lesions had I dined. Why had I not grown a tail from all that caffeine ingestion, I asked myself, staring into my hands, for my palms had become a mirror to view my undying shame during this intense madness. Saw my eyes had grown bloodshot, looked just like a sad, sad Jesus in a cantankerous world of sin. Attempted to ohm out, relax, but I absolutely could not. Found myself speaking in tongues to a wayward salamander, trying to convince him there was a biblical plague of hedgehogs. As I walked on the crag amidst aloe and yucca, I spotted smoke on a bluff before me. Thought it a wonder that one could create a bonfire on terrain this rocky, but upon closer inspection I realized I was now in great peril. Flashback to that scene, the saloon, Chihuahua, mescal in hand, let go my liquor, despondent drunk, urine-soaked pantaloons. A night of dirty, dirty deeds. The owner, he had bounty hunters tailing me, but how could they have found me in this blinding sun? And who was this contemptible pursuer? Was it Lord Fauntleroy? Kissy Kiss? Bearclaw? Rat-a-tat-tat? I did not know. But I knew I could not possibly defend myself. Reached into my pack, pulled out two sticks of dentine and a pistol. But my cannon was merely made out of chocolate, a Valentine's gift turned to goo in the intense heat. I walked quietly like the sleeping tortoise. Squatted next to a cottonwood, waited. Within moments, I saw Bearclaw standing ahead, naked as a platypus, arms painted like white like the antelope priest. I threw a pebble to distract him, see his weapon. A flintlock that discharged bullets of melting oleo, scalding the skin. His legs appeared before me in the brush. I fumbled in my pocket, discovered a burnt sienna crayon, threw it like a dart right into the bastard's sclera. He stumbled backwards, stunned. I wrestled him to the ground, two duelists prepared to smell one another's blood. The scout kept screaming aloud, K-pi pabo bo kim teo wee e-sap, meaning he wished to see my brains hit ground, but I got my arm around his neck and felt the crunch of his trachea. My God, was it ever liberating to waste a dude once again. Past the line of adobe huts, carcasses strewn all over the grounds before them. By a sage clump, I witnessed a pair of piglets suckling on their dead mother's teat, dried blood painting the surface all around her. Birds of prey flew ahead of a dust storm, whipping mud up powerfully enough to tear one's flesh, pebbles of sand speeding through the air like ammunition. And it suddenly occurred to me that perhaps I had become the scourge of the land, that eyeless avenging angel, wreaking havoc on both correct and incorrect foes, an ominous, threatening figure, and this felt quite pleasant, really. I woke pantless, lying in the depths of a gulch, realizing that most days I'm my only friend, though the desert in its own little way is a friend as well. For it discloses its secrets to me, the wind whispers its most fascinating tales. They occasionally point me towards something edible. Look behind the Prairie Dog Hotel, they inform me. Not sure what I found to eat there. It was green, tasted hideous, but it was nourishment nonetheless. Once again I come upon a civilization. At the four of the habitations is a brothel, which I naturally decide to visit. Inside I meet a Negro prostitute named Cancha Doncha, and ask her if I could use the facilities to more finely adjust my corporeal virtues. I emerge rejuvenated, wearing my longest high heels, curled mustaches, lipstick. And though I surely should have reeked of dung, I stunk like a dozen bare root roses instead. Fresh ones, not the rotten kind that you cut up in the kitchen sink. Rested on the loins of Cantia for hours, chasing over sweetmeats during brief but satisfying fits of passion. And then suddenly I recollected that I possessed no monetary funds. Waited until she slept, made a mad dash for the window, and I screamed, Yahee! As I rushed back to my wasteland home. Running across a field of gypsum, eyeballing that cairn of rocks I would call my bed for the eve, I thought of the endurance this desert abode has instilled in me, the might it takes to lead such a sordid existence. For now is the time of my vision quest, I realized, that all-important walkabout, dream time for my spirit self, a prolonged period of incubation in these hollowed grounds. And when I finally came to rest, I saw myself in high school biology again. I was leaning back, allowing a very languid-looking raven to devour all of my entrails. But strangely, the expression on my face read of a happiness untold, a fulfillment no one should ever dare to explain. And once again, everything before me went white, and then a deathly gray. That's it! Man, I didn't faint. I thought I was going to faint. You know?
Why did you think you were going to faint, Dan?
Because I'm not used to, there was just one story just all the way through, you know, and I thought, I'm going to run out of breath, strangulate, and just topple over the ground. You're not even EMT trained, are you? I don't know that. You could be.
I'm not EMT trained, but I was trained on what's that where you push down on the chest?
Oh, that's when you get something lodged in your throat.
No, not the Heimlich maneuver.
Okay.
CPR.
Yes.
I was trained on CPR in the early 90s.
CPR was one of my favorite groups of the early 80s. No, they weren't. Where is that one I'm thinking of? CCR. I like them. They weren't really around in the 80s, though.
So, that was, once again, Dan Gleason reading, what was the, can you give us the title once again, sir?
It's called In the Westlands, but the long version is In the Westlands, the travelogue for a place familiar but impossible to get to.
And this has been published in zine form?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
is out in the world at Quimby's. And so the things that are published as zines are different than the things which are on your website, on housed at stopgostop.com?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What's the difference? Why are some things zines and some things on the web, and how does that all work?
Maybe I didn't understand the question. The stuff on the website, you have writings
posted to the web.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the same. So people can that's exactly the same as the stuff which is in the zines?
Yeah.
So people can just go to the website and copy it. Read it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You really broke that down. I'm sorry. No, I don't put it all on the website. But
so it's not all the same?
Well, some of it is the same. Yeah. A lot of it. All the good stuff's on the website. That's true, I guess. Yeah, I can just go to the website. Well, that's... Yeah, I gotta get going.
So, I know you do readings periodically out in public, not just on the radio, but actually in front of people who can see you and that you can see back. Do you have any events planned? Anything coming up? I think you just had a recent reading at Quimby's.
Yeah. And I should have brought some details about that event. It's on February 17th, a Saturday.
But one could check either your website, stopgostop.com/Dan Gleason.
Uh-huh.
Or the Quimby's website.
No, it's not. It's not there. So that won't.
It's not on the Quimby's website.
Yeah, it's for my good friend Melinda Fries in Salem, and to Rob and Zena,
it's at the Free Store.
Free Store. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. That's terrible.
What's Melinda Fries's website?
Ausgang.
Ausgang.
Go to Ausgang.
So, yes, at the Free Store.
She told me to be prepared to talk about that, and I'm terrible. That's bad. I'm sorry.
Well, we got the information.
Good. Because you do the thinking for us.
Thank you so much for coming down on this bitterly cold evening.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Baby. I love it. I'm going to take the train home, and I'm probably this could be it. This could be it. I could be trapped out in the cold for quite some time, so this could be my last one. You know, which is, then thank goodness it got recorded. We recorded it.
Yes, but yeah. I'm going to give you that recording, and if you, you know, oh, if no. you freeze to death on the,
you're going to have to throw it away.
No, I mean, they're going to have to find, recording. You know, like, find it on your frozen
corpse. Put this on his person, yeah, put this on his person now. Slip this into his pocket.
Well, thanks once again. this is something else on WLUW. There's some great stuff still coming up, including I've got some tickets I'm going to give away in a little bit for
the worst chap.
The Noism 7. I'm going to cut your mic off.
Okay. I'm sorry about it. I
Noism 7 performance, dance performance at the Dance Center of Columbia College. I'll be giving those tickets away in a little bit. Up first, Fred Longberg Home. The Fred Longberg Home Quartet from Bridges Freeze Before Roads. We're going to hear Exit, the third. They're all titled Exit, but this is the third track on the CD.